Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, nearly 25 years after his death, Francis Schaeffer is still considered to be one of the foremost shapers of modern Christianity. He was an author, a church pastor, a philosopher. He had this unique ability to engage people from almost any walk of life. Scientists, artists, doubters, skeptics, intellectuals, labourers, children. Colin Duryea's is well placed to write a biography on the life of Francis Schaeffer because he himself is an author who studied directly under Schaeffer at his well-known Swiss chalet called Le Brie. Colin's written this book, Francis Schaeffer, An Authentic Life, and he joins us now. Welcome to Open House, Colin.
Oh, thank you for having me on your programme.
You know, many will have heard of Le Brie. It's the Swiss word for shelter, these centres that Francis Schaeffer set up all around the world, and in the end they actually popped up all over the place. Basically centres of thought and discussion, really, weren't they? Tell me about your experience at the Swiss Le Brie. You had a period of time there studying directly under Schaeffer.
Yes, I first went to Le Brie shortly after beginning university studies in this University of Istanbul, of all places. And this was in the late 1960s. So I was there at the golden age of Le Brie, when students were coming from all over and other people coming from all over the world to this community, which was in a tiny village high on the Swiss Alps. So right off the beaten track, and yet people were hearing about it in all kinds of places, such as India and on the Hippie Trail and Australia and various places.
What was the attraction? Why were so many people drawn from so many varied places around the world to it?
I think the key to what Le Brie was all about was that here was a place where people could get honest answers to their questions. That period in the 60s was very honest in the fact that many people were open about searching for spirituality and for reality, and trying to get past what they called in those days, the plastic culture. And this was very attractive. And the fact that it was a community, too, where lots of young people were together talking about things attracted people. I myself was attracted because I'd heard Schaeffer speak a year before I went in London, giving some lectures. And although a lot of it went over my head, I was attracted by his passion for truth and for trying to understand what was going on in the world right now.
And give us a bit of a picture as to what a meeting at Le Brie, or what a day at Le Brie actually looked like. What happened?
Well, somebody compared it to a bit like a Benedictine community. It was based upon a mixture of study and actual real work, where you worked in gardens or washed dishes or did various jobs. I think some people might have done carpentry. So if you were a student at Le Brie, half your day would be working on some chores like that, and then half a day would be studying. And the studying meant reading books. But at that time, when there wasn't much of Schaeffer in publication, it usually meant listening to recordings of seminars and lectures that he'd done, and those by other people. There was lots happening. It was very intensive. You felt like you were very much listened to and cared for. Your questions were taken very seriously.
Did you have much personal time with Francis Schaeffer himself?
I was very fortunate, because at that time, even though there was a lot of students, he was able to give more time than he was later on in his life. And I had a number of sessions with him, which were very, very helpful, very challenging. I carried on corresponding with him in following years, and would send him things that I was writing, in my early days as a writer.
Well, let's talk about
really like a mentor.
Yes. Well, let's talk about Schaeffer the man then, since you were able to get up close and personal with him. He certainly ended up in a very different place to where he began, didn't he?
Yes. One of the reasons why I wanted to write the biography was there were lots of people who knew something about Schaeffer, but it's usually under some kind of label, Schaeffer the apologist or Schaeffer the Christian activist in Reagan America, or any of those kind of labels. But the actual person himself, to me, was fascinating. How did he get from being somebody who barely made it in secondary school, as he put it, barely made it in high school, to somebody who, after he died, was praised by the President of the United States, the most powerful nation on earth? When you think about the fact that he had such a humble beginning, to end up with his knowledge of what was going on in the world, where he'd spoken with people from all kinds of backgrounds, engineering, philosophy, philosophy, artists, writers. This is truly remarkable.
Mm. He really started off as quite a fundamentalist, didn't he? I mean, he presided over a number of church splits and denominational factional splits and all sorts of things, which later on I guess to some degree regretted. He's something of a paradox because he was this fundamentalist, very critical of other denominations for what he saw as being too liberal. He was very critical of his own Presbyterian denomination under various guises when it actually split. And yet here's this guy who enjoyed art and he was engaging in film and music and other cultural pursuits, all of which would otherwise be seen as completely sinful to a typical fundamentalist of the time.
Yes, his journey is remarkable because even when you go right back into his early life, you find many things are unexpected, such as his interest in art, which was very untypical of the fundamentalists of his day. And this was partly as a result of a teacher he had at the beginning of secondary school who encouraged him in the arts. And then as he started to explore art colleges himself and later with his friendship with Professor Hans Ruckmacher, the art historian, this interest in art grew. And then his interest in philosophy started off very early. He was still at high school when he started to read philosophy. And he went through a pilgrimage. The kind of fundamentalism that he was involved in, the separatist stuff in the 1930s, that seems very odd to us today. It seems very narrow and restrictive. But in the context of the time, it was more a fundamentalism of going back to the basics of the Christian faith, such as emphasizing the virgin birth of Christ and the fact that the Christ's death on the cross was something unique as the only way of salvation. So it was to do with fundamental doctrines. It was only later that fundamentalism became more like the modern form of fundamentalism, which is seen very much as being based upon blind faith, you know, where you don't question what you do. Mm. Schaefer's attitude was totally different, that the faith that's demanded by Christianity is not a blind faith, it's a questioning faith. And he continued to question through his whole life. He was willing to, if somebody came up with evidence that Christianity wasn't true, he'd be willing to give it up. You know, and I'm sure that he would have done if somebody had, you know, been able to give a persuasive case against Christianity.
Yes.
So he was totally honest in that. And it was his honesty which really appealed to people when they put their questions to him. But he had this ability to put forward ideas that you might violently disagree with and yet put it over in a caring way, in a way that made you think about it and challenged you and got past your barriers.
Mm. This is Open House right across Australia. We're talking to Colin Duryez. He's written a biography on the life of Francis Schaefer. It's called Francis Schaefer, An Authentic Life. Somebody once actually said to me, if it wasn't for Francis Schaefer, a program like Open House wouldn't even exist. It's very interesting. The openhouse.net.au has the podcast of our conversation with Colin. Colin, it's very interesting the amount of men and women of God who have experienced crises of faith. And in many ways, when they get through it, it's almost made them the people that they've become on to be. And they've almost shaped the legacy that they've left in their wake. Francis Schaefer was no exception to that rule, was he? He went through a major crisis of faith.
He did, and this happened in the early 1950s particularly, although we don't know how long the period was when he was going through this crisis. And as a result of that crisis, he was able to step outside of his separatist background and start making his home a place of hospitality where people would come, which eventually led to the work of Lubbery, which was open to people from anywhere in the world. This crisis was very much to do with the question of reality, because he felt that truth is not just religious, it's not simply religious truth, it's about truth to what is there, to the real universe, to the real human being. Mm. And he saw God as the ultimate reality behind all that exists. And so the question of reality was very central to him, and he felt that his own life was lacking the reality of what Christian belief is all about.
He was lacking love, wasn't it? The big word was love. He couldn't see love in his life and love in those of the other separatists around him.
That's right. And he felt that if Christianity is true, it's true that a person has made the universe and that we're made in his image, then people are unutterably valuable, and we're violating the whole nature of truth if we do not care for others and if we don't put others before ourselves, going right back to the heart of Christ's teaching, basically.
Yes, and then there was that, you know, famous depiction of him tramping up in his study, up on the second floor, and the family could hear him treading from one side of the room to the other for what seemed like weeks, as he was really wrestling with whether indeed all of this was a lie or whether the Christian faith actually was true. And like you said, you really believe that he was a man of integrity. If he'd actually believed it was false, he would have chucked it all in and packed up shop.
Yes, and his family knew this, and they were pretty terrified when they heard his footsteps, particularly Edith, who really knew what was going on, Edith, his wife, and because she knew that he could, you know, he could have concluded that that this was all wrong, and he would have abandoned it. So it was quite a trial for her as well. But it's part of the nature of Christian faith is that it has to be able to stand trial as a test of its truth. And yes. I think this is why so many people that God uses do go through such trials of fire and water and become stronger as a result of it.
If you were to bring it down to a sentence or so, what do you think pulled him out of that crisis of faith to the point where he got back to the stage where he said, no, this is true. I may not see much love in myself or those separatist friends of mine at the moment, but it is actually out there. What actually pulled him out there to, in the end, believe rock solidly that the Christian faith was true?
What brought him back was the fact that he could ask the hardest questions he could conceive based on his experience as a human being of the world in which we live and his own self and others. And those questions had an answer in the Bible. And those answers couldn't be found anywhere else, no matter how much you searched through the centuries of philosophical thinking or looked at what was happening in the arts and music and everything else that's going on in the contemporary world. Nowhere else was there that the answer that was satisfying on every aspect of a person, the mind, the imagination, the emotions, relationships, which are particularly vulnerable to going wrong, all these things.
Frankie Schaefer, the son of Francis Schaefer, has been quite critical of his father in his own recent biography. You also mentioned in your book that Priscilla, Francis's eldest daughter, had a number of nervous breakdowns in later years. Be honest, was Francis a good father?
Well, I think he was. I think that the children did suffer as a result of Lubbery because of the enormous number of people who came there. When I was there, I think there was about 100 students there in these tiny chalets across the village. So there was a cost to what went on, and I think there were mistakes made in terms of particularly with Frank as the youngest in the way that he was neglected. But it's easy to sit back in an armchair now and say, yes, all these mistakes were made. But I think that essentially he was a good father, yes. And Frank does acknowledge in several parts in his book the way his father stood by him in different times, so that in all his bitterness and everything, you can see through all his words that there is this very unusual, remarkable person there, his father.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, Colin, what do you think is Francis Schaefer's ultimate contribution to the world, his ultimate legacy that he's left behind?
He was, he's been described as a weeping prophet, it's a rather grandiose term, but I think he was a prophet in the sense that he called us back to the fact that there is truth, that there's a solid rock on which we can look at the world and we can understand not only the world of science and dark matter and all that, but also the mysteries of our own humanity, our own identity, and that this is all there in the Bible, and we can see it for ourselves. We can look, you know, if we look carefully, it's open to everybody. So he was calling people back, and his passion for truth, and for backed up by his concern for people, was very, very powerful. And I love his unique take on things, the way that when he was talking about theology, for example, he wouldn't just use the standard terminology. He would invent all kinds of quaint terms for understanding, so that it kind of jolted you into a fresh way of looking at things. Yes. He was somebody who opened our eyes and say this expression, he opened doors for people.
Yes.
He was somebody who gave so much, and there's an enormous number of people that have benefited from what he gave.
Mm. And the Lubbery movement today, how many centres and how strong are they these days?
I don't know offhand how many there are, but I know there's one starting up right now in Brazil, which is very exciting because Brazil is a very, very important and fascinating country. And the centres in Korea and England and Holland and Switzerland and a couple of centres in America. I don't know whether there's anywhere in Australia.
Yes, there is one in Sydney, I believe, yeah.
Oh, great. Well, I was recently at the English Library, and I was very impressed by the students there. It was a very international bunch of students who were asking, still, you know, with some very, very exciting questions about the whole meaning of history and or much more personal questions. So the vibrancy is still there, even though the leader has gone, the patriarch has gone, the work is continuing, and it's still got the emphasis on honest questions, honest answers, yes. And providing a shelter, which isn't like a retreat from the world, but a kind of holding center where you can be surrounded by an atmosphere which reflects the truth of the message.
Yes, yes. If only all of us could have half the legacy, hey? When our years are over. Colin, it's been good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on Open House.
Thank you.
Yes, Colin Duriez. He is the author of this biography on the life of Francis Schaeffer. Francis being the man who set up Labrie centres all around the world, these kind of centres of learning and thought and discussion, exploring life from the Christian perspective, and who indeed has left quite a legacy. The book is called Francis Schaeffer, An Authentic Life. It's through Crossway Books.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.